What a treat. What a treat this is. Selfishly, but also for all of our viewers, all of our listeners, all of our readers, Justin Felder. He's my friend. He's your friend. You know, we like to butter up our guests here, Justin, on the Go Long podcast, but I genuinely mean it. One of the nicest human beings you'll meet in sports or otherwise, right here before you. Fox 5 in Atlanta, sports reporter, sports director. He does everything down there in Atlanta sports. So first off, Justin, how in the hell are you doing? I love the background. You know, I call it my home away from home. If I'm ever down there in Atlanta, I'm just waiting for Fondy, your dog, to pop up and say hello. But first, let's get the pleasantries out of the way. What's happening, dude?
Nothing much, man. So good to see you again so soon. We got to hang out at the Combine, which was awesome. And I'm sorry, I'm kind of blocking Fondy's spot, and he just walked up. I don't know if somebody had the audacity to walk down the street by our house, but I heard a little rumble. But you know what? I'll tell the folks at home, he's a big fan of Tyler Dunn. We were worried that he was gonna lose it. Our dog is a little short fuse. He's a good guy. He means well. And named after the fine town of Fond du Lac in Wisconsin. I know you have many Wisconsin viewers. A little shout out. My wife is from Fond du Lac. So Fondy is our dog. And if we have a delivery, he will. Well, you'll know about it before I will, because he'll be losing his mind.
I love it. We that's what we want on the show. Yes, me and Justin, we worked out there in Wisconsin for, I know, my entire tenure, so like 4.5 years. I think you were there before me and you outlasted me, right?
I was in Wisconsin 4.5 years total. So yeah, we were there. You got there pretty soon after I did, if I remember. And I wasn't there all that. I was there maybe a couple months longer than you. Was I there a whole season after you? I don't remember. We were there for a long time together.
Fox 11.
Yes, sir.
In the good old days.
Keep it in the family. Yeah, Fox 11 in Green Bay, covered the Packers, the good old days, the Super Bowl run, beating the Steelers. Those were exciting teams. Starting the next season undefeated and then falling to, I think it was the Chiefs and Kyle Orton at Arrowhead, a different era for the Chiefs.
I want to talk Chicken Fest. I don't care about any of these playoff results. Those were the real memories with you out there in Wisconsin. Where was Chicken Fest again?
I don't know, like Appleton. I don't remember. Hey, look.
But there was no chicken at Chicken Fest. I remember that. I just remember a big slide.
There was a slide. Hey, look, sometimes it was slim pickings for activities in the greater Green Bay area, but we had a great group, a lot of really fun people, a lot of really, you know, successful people that have gone on to big, exciting things. You chief among them, of course. I think the group of people we had made it what it was. But I mean, I love Wisconsin. It was a great time.
Definitely.
Great people.
Loved it.
It's beautiful when you can, you know, feel your fingers outside. I don't know how you do it in Buffalo, but I don't miss the freezing temperature. I miss a little bit of snow, but we don't get much of anything in Atlanta as far as that cold weather goes, which is fine by me.
Yeah, on Chicken Fest, he's not on this podcast, so we can throw him under the bus. Dan Koob, the third amigo. I could throw Matt Hippus in there. There were so many. Mike Fink, Kareem Copeland. It was a great crew. Koob, he went on that big slide. It was made for kids, as I remember, you know, like 6 and 7 and 8 year olds. He decided to get in that hay. What was it, like some type of slide? He got into a hay sack, right?
Yeah.
He wanted to put a child in his place in a race. I just remember him football spiking the hay sack. Screaming, taunting. That the kid is probably scarred for life, but it was definitely a top 10 Wisconsin moment out there.
I don't know. That kid might have been at the Combine talking at some podium about how he remembers, you know, this adult trash talking him when he was 9. I don't know. That's what I like to believe.
That's going to be definitely when he's drafted. ESPN is going to immediately go to that as the trauma, the tragedy that prospect overcame.
And you know,
a rabid TV reporter, Dan Koob.
And he was better from it. You know, we got to toughen him up. I feel like that's our responsibility with strangers' children. Toughen them up, talk some smack. No, that was neither of us. That was a mutual friend.
Okay, so let's talk some Atlanta Falcons. Have the story up at goalongtd.com right now. Sat down with Terry Fontenot, as I know you did as well, Justin. So you've got the intimate knowledge covering the Atlanta Falcons day in and day out. So definitely want to get your perspective on this team at this time. I was really fascinated by Terry Fontenot's enthusiasm, number one. Man, this guy is ready to run through a wall. He is so jacked up for this opportunity to finally find a quarterback for this Falcons team. He's been the GM for 3 years now, and they've tried to kind of skate by at the position. And hell, on this show, we were trumpeting the philosophy, right? It's different. It's counterculture. It's rebellious. Yep. Chris Lindstrom, the highest paid guard in NFL history. Jesse Bates paying a safety, drafting a tight end, drafting a wide receiver, drafting a running back, all in the top 10. Turns out you still need to be pretty damn good at quarterback to win in the NFL. And I know we've had many conversations about this over some barbecue, I believe, out there after covering that Packers-Falcons game. And I guess let's start there, Justin, because that game, covering it, I remember thinking, wow, okay, maybe this can really work. You know, Arthur Smith went for it on that fourth down late, that pitch out to Bijan Robinson. You had, I think, a fourth down touchdown run from Desmond Ridder. You had a trick play, like a handoff pitch bomb to Mac. There was just a collection of fun as hell plays in that game.
Mm-hmm.
In the dome, it's rocking. 12 points down in the fourth quarter, come back to win. They're 2-0. And then it all kind of went downhill from there. They lost to three of the four worst teams in the NFL. They lost to Joshua Dobbs 5 days after the Vikings signed Joshua Dobbs. So let's start there. You cover this team. What in the hell happened to the 2023 Atlanta Falcons?
Well, look, a couple things. I think number one is you hear it from everybody, including Terry Fontenot, Raheem Morris, everybody that was at the combine, and everybody that'll get in front of a microphone in the future, is just how fine the line is. I mean, and Raheem Morris said it himself, you know, the quarterback play, he boiled it down to that, was the difference between him being there and somebody else being there. But really, you erase a couple of those mistakes for the Falcons, and you're talking about a different team that very easily could have been in the playoffs and having a very different discussion right now. I mean, a lot of folks are going to point to the quarterback play, and that's a big part of it. And I think you put it in your great article, Sit Down with Terry Fontenot, you know, Raheem Morris saying the quiet part out loud there. And he's right, but there are other factors as well. Look, I mean, the defense, which started so strong in the season, really, you know, hit some bumps as the season went on. I don't think it's any, you know, any coincidence that that also coincided with Grady Jarrett, a guy who's criminally underrated in the league, going down with a season-ending injury. They also had a guy in David Onyemata who was just the find of all finds in free agency. I mean, I guess not. They paid him really well, but he was awesome. And then towards the end of the year, started dealing with some injuries. And they also really, you know, some depth along the offensive line. Kentavious Street, a guy who came in not off the street, but still was a signing and playing pretty well in there for Grady Jarrett. He gets hurt. So a couple things piled up, and obviously the turnovers, the quarterback play, that was at the top of it. That said, a lot of those turnovers, even against really good teams, came right at the end of games. And I think, you know, when you talk to the players, they felt like, oh, it shouldn't have come down to that. They don't want to put it on one thing. And they're right. But this was a team that showed they were right there. They have the talent to hang with anybody. And it was just a couple little things keeping them out of the playoffs, keeping them out of the wild card mix, and leading to the big changes this offseason at head coach. And it seems highly, highly, highly likely at quarterback as well.
Fantastic rundown. I think we can play this game every year with most of the 32 teams. I get it. It's March. Everybody's undefeated. Coaches, GMs are all standing there at the combine podiums, right? Just injecting hope into their respective fan bases. It's a glorious time of year. And that's why the NFL's king, because the seasons end and immediately fans can boomerang to the future and get excited about a wide receiver from nowhere, Alaska University, that's going to save their team. That's what makes the NFL special, I suppose. But in this case, it's true. And I didn't really wrap my head around it. I was in on Tampa Bay but I did think Atlanta would win the division last year. And then when Atlanta started going south, mentally, I guess I just kind of like extracted them from my NFL consciousness. When you look back, if you were to kind of shove this team under the microscope, those mistakes by Desmond Ridder just came at the absolute worst times. They really did. End of the game, end of the half, and you could see the frustration boiling over. I mean, it started as early as the Jacksonville loss out in London, right, with Mac Hollins getting in Ridder's face. I mean, it looked like he wanted to fight the quarterback. Remember that dust up? I'm sure you talked to him after the fact, and I can't even remember how he explained that away, but he was pissed, and it never really got better. I mean, he had a good game against the Texans, but those mistakes, and I think that's what's frustrating is in their head, when Arthur Smith and the coaches are sitting down with a Calais Campbell and showing him film of Ridder, I mean, they're kind of convincing him, you know, one of the best defensive players in the game, sign here because we can win with this guy. Mm-hmm. And number one would appeal to Calais Campbell, and I'm sure appeal to everybody from the top down, Terry Fontenot to Arthur Smith. He's not going to turn the ball over, right? Say what you want about Desmond Ridder. He ain't going to turn it over. Well, 12 interceptions, 7 lost fumbles, 12 total fumbles in 15 games, and easily could have won, would you say 3? I mean, I don't think it's a stretch to say 3 of those games, and not just like a thread the needle, you know, good play by the defense interception. I mean, these were really, really bad mistakes for a professional quarterback.
Right.
So I think that's why Terry Fontenot's energetic now, right? Yeah, they were 7-10, but you point to 3 plays in 3 games, could have been 10-7.
Yeah, and look, and to give, you know, Desmond Ridder some credit also, can say he won them some games, also could say that he got them right back into some games that ultimately didn't go his way, right? The phrase that Arthur Smith used from the very beginning of the season right through the end was the roller coaster, and that's what it was with Desmond Ridder. And hey, that's not my opinion. That was the head coach using that phrase over and over, and he used it in fairness about the entire team, but I think it's easy to apply it to this situation. Look, Desmond Ridder made some great plays, some great runs, some tough runs, some great throws. I mean, when he was in rhythm going over the middle and just threw it with confidence, dude's got an arm. I mean, he's tough. Teammates loved him. But yeah, it was mistakes at inopportune moments. And look, I mean, I know you've got your quarterback glory days. I don't. 99.999% of us don't. So it's easy for us to say, hey, when it's the fourth quarter and you can kick a field goal to tie it or take the lead, maybe don't take that chance. But look, he's a young guy in his second year. We talked about this at the combine. I think I'm not like against the grain out on a limb here, but I think he showed a lot where this guy can still be maybe not a frontline starter in the league. Maybe he can be. I'm not ruling it out, but I still think he's got a future in the NFL because he showed some things, showed some toughness and is still, you know, a young guy in this league. But you're right. You can't ignore the mistakes. And that's why we're having, you know, the inevitable quarterback discussion, why there are all the reports and rumors and this guy's flying here and this guy texted that he kind of likes Atlanta and everything that's happening until they ultimately make a move.
Right. We're sitting at Harry and Izzy's in Indianapolis having a nice mandate, eating some steaks, some shrimp cocktails. And I think something popped up then, right? Oh, Justin Fields, like, you know, one comment in a press conference just gets twisted and bastardized. And God, all he said in an interview was we want a quarterback that fits the city. And somehow that becomes Justin Fields to Atlanta.
It's like just aggregated the life out of it, right?
It's what it is. Say this about the position, though. They had a shot at Justin Fields year one. I mean, take it all 3 years of Terry Fontenot's regime, and you can kind of understand how they got here. But year one, they could have drafted Justin Fields. They take Kyle Pitts, right? So to me, it's like, if you really liked him, you would have taken him then. I mean, what has really changed from the film you saw out of Ohio State to the film that you've seen these 38 starts?
Right.
There's a lot to love, and the deficiencies are still there. And then, you know, last year they could have made a run at Lamar Jackson.
Right.
They didn't do it. you know, at the time, I thought it would have been smart. I think a lot of people did. I'm sure down in Atlanta, did the fans really want that? Or were they buying what the Falcons were selling on Desmond Ridder?
You know, it's tough to look back at now because it's so easy to have the revisionist history, right? You know, it's easy from this perspective for everybody to say, why didn't they go after Lamar Jackson? But at the time when you knew the draft picks it would cost and the money it would cost and the fact that they had just gotten out of the salary cap shadows of Matt Ryan and Julio Jones, I think everybody's saying, I was saying they should have got Lamar Jackson, is a lot of those people might be misremembering at the time. There were certainly people that supported it and obviously, you know, an unbelievable player. And then he goes on to have an MVP season. And again, it's just another reason for people to say, well, I was saying all along that they should have gone after him. So there was certainly, you know, a split camp. And I think we're right back in that again. There was no slam dunk, obviously, answer, you know, then. And there is, you know, so even less so now, but yeah, there's more than their fair share of people say that they were calling for Lamar Jackson all along, but that would have been a takes two to tango situation. And I think if it ever got serious, you know, Baltimore might have had something to say before letting that happen.
And I guess the point I'm getting at, Justin, is this is a team that, for the lack of a better term, they've kind of been pussyfooting around there at quarterback for 3 years, right? It's, I get it. You know, you're a new coach, a new GM, new regime. It's not something you just want to dive right into necessarily.
Right.
Plus they were in salary cap hell. You know, they had to get out of some bad contracts. So that took some time. I think maybe that's the source of Terry Fontenot's unbridled just joy is, okay, we're getting a quarterback and we don't care who knows it. Maybe it's somebody in free agency. Maybe somebody in the draft, but man, they took their time getting to this point. I don't know if it's good. I don't know if it's bad because I mean they could have pounced and it could have backfired miserably. Right. I mean maybe they draft. I mean looking back at that first draft, not what we thought at the quarterback position, right?
But well, by all accounts, their guy that year was Trey Lance. You know that's what a lot of the reporting was. You know that's what I've heard from folks around the league. And that was a guy that was popular in a lot of places around the league. So, I mean, and he could still turn into a good starter, still a super young guy, still somebody obviously that has a lot of room to develop. But that was by all wide reports, the guy that they had circled as their quarterback pick and it didn't work out. So, gosh, it's really tough to get a quarterback, but you know, you look at where they were. I think it was really widely accepted, including, you know, inside the building and outside, that they were rebuilding at first, right? They had Matt Ryan. Okay. And then they're kind of, like you said, getting out from contracts and they go to Marcus Mariota. And then ultimately they decide to go with Desmond Ridder rather than going, you know, a number of different options. And that decision didn't work out for him last year at quarterback. And that was the decision that, you know, you can point to a lot of different things, but that was one of the key pivot points in the season. And it's tough. I mean, it's not easy to go out and just snap up a quarterback anywhere. I mean, remember, the other thing is, remember, Desmond Ridder was in a ton of mock drafts as a first round pick and as a second round pick. When he slid and the Falcons got him in the third round, people were like, oh my gosh, you can let him sit for a year. You got a great mentor with a similar-ish style in Marcus Mariota. This is a great setup, and they got such a good value. And again, maybe, you know, time will tell and history will look back on it being a good pick if he does end up, you know, or a good value pick, whether it's in Atlanta or elsewhere, depending what he turns into. But, you know, it's tough. It takes a big swing to go out and get somebody unless you're in the number one spot in the draft, the catbird seat, and you get your choice of quarterbacks. And even then it's no sure thing. But, you know, I think your article drops a lot of hints. Sitting down with Terry Fontenot, everything that they're saying, they want an answer to this question right now. They don't want to take this question mark into training camp. And like you said, and as they have said over and over again, there are many different routes they can go down. There are many different good routes they can go down, but none of those come without question marks.
I think that there's a lot of good that this front office has done too. You mentioned some of the players earlier. David Onyemata, one of the more underrated defensive players in the sport, Jesse Bates's contract actually looks pretty good when you see what Antoine Winfield's going to get paid. At the time, 4 years, $64 million for a safety. What are you doing? I mean, this guy is a savant back there. I'm sure you've talked to him as well. Like, the way he sees the game is different. I mean, he is inside of the heads of all young quarterbacks. That's how he picked off Bryce Young twice. He was studying the route concepts that Frank Reich used before. It was simple. He jumped it, made the plays. Offensively, we've talked about all of the weaponry, obviously, and Bijan Robinson has a chance to be a top five running back in the NFL. I guess to me, all of this points to Kirk Cousins. I think if you've got this roster and you've got veterans that are ready to win now, and you've got a little cap flexibility to make Kirk Cousins a better offer than Minnesota is probably willing to make. I get it, off of the torn Achilles, 36. How much football does he have? But Kirk Cousins wasn't exactly relying on his athleticism and elusiveness. I think Kirk Cousins can still be everything we've seen and maybe even better. I mean, the last 2 years with Kevin O'Connell, I should say 1.5 years, was his best football he's ever played. And now that's in the same offense, similar offense, I think you could say, that he'd have here in Atlanta with Zach Robinson, because Zach Robinson replaced Kevin O'Connell as Sean McVay's offensive coordinator. So there's a lot of familiarity with the X's and O's, and Kirk Cousins speaking with him a couple years ago. I mean, he was fed up with 7 play callers in 7 years pre-O'Connell. I think that means something to him. Yeah, Kirk Cousins is also a man who tries to make as much money as he possibly can. Atlanta can probably give him that. And you can kind of talk yourself into competing for a Super Bowl with this team. I can see Kirk Cousins believing in Kirk Cousins and saying, all right, if Matt Stafford did it with the LA Rams, why can't I do it down there? So, and his wife's from the area.
Right.
It checks a lot of boxes, right? I mean, if we're going to try to connect dots, those are the dots to me I'm connecting.
It certainly does. It makes a lot of sense. And I mean, it does seem like, you know, we talked about how one little line and one whatever article sparked the Justin Fields storm. And I lamented to you or complained to you very loudly at the combine, like, where is this coming from? Excuse me.
You're not now pissed off easily, too. I should know.
Oh, yeah. It got me riled up. But now you're seeing a lot more of the household name insiders talking about Kirk Cousins to Atlanta. I think I find that a lot easier to buy. Or maybe it's businessman Hall of Famer Kirk Cousins. Just, you know, they wouldn't put anything out there just to sweeten the Vikings offer. That would never happen. But if it did, that wouldn't be the worst thing for them. That said, yeah, it certainly makes a lot of sense. I think if you get, you know, first half pre-injury of the season of 2023 Kirk Cousins in this offense, with this, you know, running back, wide receiver, tight end, a play caller that you correctly point out is going to most likely run a system very similar to what he is just coming from. Yeah, I feel like you're talking about a floor of a top 10 offense, right? And a defense that will return a lot of young talent and veterans like Caden Ellis, Onyemata, Jesse Bates at all levels of the defense, right down the middle of the defense. You feel good. I mean, you feel really, I think, you know, with Kirk Cousins, which will cost a lot of money, will keep you from being able to maybe do some things in free agency that you might have otherwise done. That said, just adding him to this group and filling in the other pieces and getting, you know, maybe the first edge rusher off the board in the draft, you're probably everybody's pick in the NFC South, right? And that's, if you're in the dance and you get a home game in the playoffs, in the NFC, you've got a chance, right? Does it vault them immediately to San Francisco's level? I mean, that's in the eye of the beholder. But again, you never know who's going to be healthy, who's going to be playing well 20 weeks into the season. So at some point, if you feel like doing this will make us, you know, will not get us in the playoffs, but will give us easily, clearly the best shot, health questions about the Achilles notwithstanding, then it makes perfect sense. And this is a team that has said 1,000% in your story. I asked Terry Fontenot when we sat down. We heard it from Raheem Morris at the podium in our sit-downs. They feel like they are ready to win now. They're not running from that. So, you know, even Kirk Cousins, it's easy to say, would give you a better chance of the now part of it than most rookies would. You can't bank on getting CJ Stroud.
Perfectly said. Maybe one of those rookies has a CJ Stroud like season, but that's a pull of the jackpot machine, right? And it is in the eye of the beer holder, right? I guess if you're drinking some sweet water down there in Atlanta, you can maybe think of some.
I got some spotted cows in the fridge if you want. It's a little early. It's a work day.
He beat San Francisco without Justin Jefferson, right? So let's get to the. I'm sure a lot of people play fantasy football that listen, and they're watching the Atlanta Falcons, and they're wondering, what in the hell are you doing, Arthur Smith? Right? He is. To sit in some of those press conferences must have been fun, by the way. He's got to know that the fantasy football community just can't stand him. And he probably doesn't give a shit.
That was his favorite thing. I think part of it last year is, and they said as much, you know, in little bits and pieces here and there, I think it was trying to be careful with a guy like Bijan Robinson, you know, ease him into the NFL workload. Arthur Smith alluded to it. Even Bijan, I remember I sat down with him, gosh, halfway through the season, somewhere around there. And he said, you know, towards the end of the year, I remember him saying, I think, you know, I'm going to be getting more activity. And he did. So I think they were very conscious of his workload earlier in the season. And Kyle Pitts was a guy that was playing through a lot more of an injury, a lot more of a comeback than we realized, which I think contributes to his usage and the amount of time that he was on the field. So we'll have to see how Raheem Morris and Zach Robinson, the new offensive coordinator, handle those guys if they just take the reins off, make, you know, Bijan even more of a featured piece. But remember, you also have Tyler Algier, a more than capable second running back in there who's a bowling ball. It's really complementary style to Bijan. But yeah, I think I know Arthur Smith was a favorite of the fantasy football community, but whoever comes in and is throwing the ball, handing off the ball, Zach Robinson calling plays, just got first round picks all over the place. And when you're talking about the offense, it doesn't really come into fantasy football unless you're in a way deeper league than I am, but the offensive line is real good too. I mean, they paid Chris Lindstrom, consistently one of the best guards in the game. I mean, you got Jake Matthews, the ultimate Iron Man, has the franchise record, you know, in games played, which is crazy for an offensive lineman, or excuse me, consecutive games played. And you also got a guy from Cuse, Matthew Bergeron, your guy, who really did a lot of good things last year, and a guy that, man, you just really didn't hear his name called that much, which for a rookie at that spot in the interior of the line, that's probably the best you can ask for.
That's what's crazy. I mean, I'm driving around listening to the national talking heads instead of Coulter Wall, the hat behind me. There's mistake number one, right? No, there are some good talking heads out there. Love me some Adam Schein. He's great. But one station that shall remain nameless was having the debate on the Atlanta Falcons. And I forget who it was. But, man, this person was saying they drafted all these skill position players and they didn't build a team like you should on the offensive line and the defensive line. And I'm thinking their offensive line is one of the best in football.
And right? It's a bunch of first-round picks. Also, yeah. I mean, you're talking about Jake Matthews, Chris Lindstrom, Kalen McGarry. They've invested a lot in the offensive line and homegrown guys, you know, Drew Dahlman at center, Matthew Bergeron. Yeah, they put a lot of resources in the offensive line. Lindstrom and McGarry were in the same draft.
Right. Man, the play that Fontenot was detailing in that story where Kalen McGarry just literally drove a defensive end to that defensive end sideline and then dumped him in front of his coach. That'll be a source of pride for him, for this team. I think that if they find the right quarterback, and if that quarterback is Kirk Cousins, this is a team that you have to take serious in the NFC. So let's take a big picture, though, Justin. You would have the intimate knowledge on this. What is the power structure really like with the Atlanta Falcons, right? So I think Terry Fontenot probably comes out of it with, I don't know. I mean, maybe I'm wrong. So him and Arthur Smith, it doesn't work out. Arthur Smith is fired. To me, that's Arthur Blank basically telling Terry Fontenot, okay, I believe in you to be the point man on finding the next quarterback. But you also have Rich McKay there. You know, how much input does he have on football decisions? How much input will Raheem Morris have coming in? Right? That's a conversation had when you're interviewing these coaches. And then there's also the Bill Belichick factor where I'm I got to think that's a major reason Bill Belichick isn't in Atlanta. He's coming in. He's going to want a lot of power. Whether it was his decision or whether it was the Falcons' decision, that wasn't going to happen. So how does it really break down with this team internally?
Yeah, so there was, interestingly, just from a, you know, journalist perspective, there's a lot of interest from fans in the power structure here in Atlanta in the offseason, especially as talks were happening, like you said, about Bill Belichick and how things shook out. I mean, and the press conference after the season, when Arthur Blank and Rich McKay were up there talking about the decision, that it was just this huge question of where was Terry Fontenot? He wasn't up there. Why isn't he up there? Is his job safe? And there was so much intrigue about that. I found it interesting. They've somewhat shifted things in terms of the dynamic, what we've been told. And this is coming from the team this offseason. So Rich McKay, who was essentially, you know, over Arthur Smith and Terry Fontenot and would report to Arthur Blank, Rich McKay. He's now going to be focusing on stadium projects. He's also going to be overseeing Atlanta United, the MLS team, hugely successful MLS team, by the way, and kind of serving in that role. So he's essentially taking a step back from the day-to-day football operations side. Team president Greg Beatles, is a guy who I saw reported. I didn't see him at the combine, but was apparently there. I saw that reported. He'll kind of step into that role, but ultimately I think it's going to be more of Raheem Morris and Terry Fontenot, when needed, going directly to Arthur Blank. In terms of who is getting the final say on this draft pick or that move, that's something that this team has historically been very loath to go into specifics on, which I think applies to a lot of teams. What you hear from them is collaboration, right? Is that they are going to be working together on all these things. And ultimately, and I asked Terry Fontenot about that when we sat down one-on-one, is what are those discussions like? Because, you know, this is your job and you feel very passionately and you're not going to agree on everything with Raheem Morris or with Kyle Smith, one of the key pieces in his front office structure. And they said it's productive. And ultimately they work together, stack the draft board and still agree on, you know, the best player available when it comes to draft and bringing in good players all over the roster. So what you hear is collaboration a lot from these guys. But yeah, I think I don't know how much it changes functionally having, you know, not having Rich McKay in there with then Terry Fontenot and Arthur Smith versus having team president Greg Beatles in there. Now, I'm not sure how much that changes things. I don't think it changes anything from the fans' point of view, but you're right. It was a very interesting thing that a lot of people were looking in on and keen observers on, especially during the coaching search.
Then lo and behold, there's Elliot Wolf at his right. press conference, right? Saying more in 15 minutes than Bill Belichick said in 20 plus years on how their draft process works. He's like,
right,
you know, Gerard Mayo will have some input. Lonzo Highsmith will have some input, but right. Yeah, I'm going to make the final call.
Yeah. And I think,
which you is know, appreciated. And one thing, we're not talking about nuclear codes here.
And a couple things there, and not to bring everything back to the quarterback, but look, it's the offseason. This is what we're going to be doing until the ink is dry. But a couple things on that. Number one, both Raheem Morris and Terry Fontenot have made a point several times of talking about how many people they have in their building who are quarterback experts, essentially, yes. Right? You have Zach Robinson. You have TJ Yates, who moves from wide receivers coach to quarterbacks coach. His natural position, he's from the Atlanta area. And also, interestingly, Drake Mays said, oh, yeah, I got to talk to my fellow Tar Heel in the meeting at the Combine and kind of made a lot of ears perk up of, oh, we got TJ Yates at the Combine. Cool, didn't see him or that. Okay, so he's in on in on some of the quarterback interviews. Noted, but other folks from around the league, people from the Saints organization who'd worked with Terry Fontenot and Drew Brees there. So they are making a point of, we have a lot of real smart voices in the room when it comes to this decision.
And the other thing, been around forever.
Absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. That one of the names that's mentioned regularly. You're absolutely right. The other thing that I thought was really cool is when I sat down with Zach Robinson, I got to find this clip and tweet it. I feel like people will be interested, but I talked to him about his relationship with Raheem Morris and being in LA and Zach Robinson said, yeah, one of the things I love to do is, you know, Raheem would come to my office when we were talking about college quarterbacks and help, you know, talking about scouting college quarterbacks. And I said, oh, really? Well, because that's going to come up again. And I asked him about it. He said, well, you know, we got a big structure and a lot of people and Terry, you know, and he kind of, you know, didn't want to go super into detail about that. But it told me that this is something that Raheem Morris has some interest and experience in. And remember, known as a defensive guy, but coached on the offensive side of things as well. Worked with Sean McVay. So a lot of experts in on this on this decision in particular?
Gosh, I love the context because I can't really compare what Terry Fontenot said and how he said it to me and the embassy suites, you know, last week to how he was year one or year two or year three. He just as a an evaluator of the human condition, I suppose. Mm-hmm. Man, did he strike me as somebody that's going to have a lot of say in this all, right? And then the way you just kind of broke it all down with Rich McKay kind of going here, and you know, out goes Arthur Smith, who you know is trying to show Calais Campbell why he should sign with the Falcons because what Desmond Ridder can do, and is Raheem Morris. I think Terry Fontenot's the, like you said, collaboration. Somebody's making the call. Somebody's making that decision. If I was a betting man, I'd say it's the GM. And he sounds like somebody that wants to win now. My guess would be Kirk Cousins. What's your guess, Justin Felder?
I think at this point, that's going to be the big swing they take, right? But it doesn't happen in a vacuum. You know, that's the first thing, is there are other teams with financial flexibility that might have compelling offers as well. And, you know, if you're Minnesota and you're surveying the landscape, you've got a few more days where you're the only team that can negotiate with them, where maybe you sweeten your offer just a little bit. So I think, yeah, all things being equal, that seems like the most likely direction they go at this point. I mean, I wouldn't be shocked either to see them, you know, could they pair a Kirk Cousins with somebody like a Michael Penix if he slips, you know, one of those quarterbacks that ends up a little bit lower down and you try to address the future and the present? I think that's possible. But that seems to be the likeliest route right now. But other teams will have a say. Kirk Cousins will certainly have a say. And the one thing that I took away is, you know, I'm sure you tried to pin down Terry Fontenot in your discussion as well. I tried to get any little piece of information. I said, okay, is there a plan A right now? I know you're not going to tell me. If you want to tell me, you can. But is there a plan A that we are following? This is the road we're following. And he said, yeah, we've got a plan right now. And it evolves every day, and we can adapt, and we can go different directions. But he said, yeah, there is a plan A. And I wonder if that isn't make Kirk Cousins say no first. Because, yeah, if you get the guy from the first half of last season with this offense, you're the division favorite. And this is a team that wants to win. They want to fill the building. They want to be back in the playoffs. And they believe that the biggest missing piece, and it's not the only one. They've got other questions. But if they can address the biggest missing piece, even if it's for a big price tag, I think that's the first big swing they'll take. I think that's the way it's looking right now. But hey, gosh, it was definitely Justin Fields like 72 hours ago.
Right. That's a great point, too. It can be both. I mean, they're in a position to take the big swing at Kirk Cousins, pay him a ton of money, and still draft a quarterback on that cheap deal, whether it's the first round or the second round, develop, see what comes of it. I mean, we're just on the heels of seeing what Jordan Love did after sitting for 3 years. So there's no harm in, you know, drafting a quarterback high and then not playing that quarterback. And then if Kirk Cousins, by some miracle, is a budding Hall of Famer at 36, 37, 38, well, that's a good problem to have.
Then you're probably in the playoffs. And yeah, you worry about that later. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. I think, it's tough to predict. And again, you know, I use the same phrase. It's like, it's easy to say, well, I'd draft a quarterback because that's how you build a dynasty and Patrick Mahomes and win for years and years and years. But this is a team, again, that feels like they can win now and wants to win now and is, you know, is tired of sitting right in the middle and picking number eight in the draft. And if you had to guess who's the person on planet Earth that is attainable, you can't get Josh Allen right now. Who gives you the best chance of getting over that little hump on the way to the big mountain of the Super Bowl? It's probably the guy who was on track for, you know, to get MVP votes last year. And again, none of us know the health. We saw him on a tennis ball, on a tennis court, doing dropbacks. My medical degree does not cover diagnosing Achilles recoveries just based on social media videos. So, you know, I think those are probably some questions that the Falcons will want to ask and have answered before they start writing $40 million checks.
Hey, before I lose you though, is there a tin of desperation, maybe a strong word, but you're competing with Georgia football. which is massive down there. Mm-hmm. SEC football. Atlanta is a very transient city. You know, do you think that this all factors into the decision on needing to really make a big swing here? Because you've got to be relevant. This isn't exactly, you know, Green Bay where we were, or Buffalo where I live. It's the town is the team and the team is the town. There's other stuff to do down there. And this is a Falcons team that's gone 7-10 3 years in a row, inching toward that state of irrelevancy. Bad and boring is the worst place to be. So that's what makes me think they'd make an offer Kirk Cousins can't refuse. Or if they go the draft route, maybe doing something crazy and something big to make people care about the Atlanta Falcons down there. Could that factor in?
Well, I think it's just winning, right? I mean, you know, let's say you go back in time and pay the draft picks to Baltimore and you get Lamar Jackson and they're a team that, you know, wins some games 50-48 and loses some games 51-49, right? Maybe that would get people in seats and maybe that's, you know, maybe that's something you think about, but ultimately it's winning. It's people want to come in and see a winner. And I think if there was a way that they could be, I don't know how, you know, this defense goes crazy. If they sign Kirk Cousins, the offense just doesn't work and they start the season 9-1 winning games with a dominant defense, I think that will be just fine by people. I think people would find a way to be okay with that. But yeah, you're right. When it's right there in the middle, it's tough to get people excited. And yeah, I'm sure that's on the minds of, you know, the marketing folks and things like that. I don't think that star power is the first thing in Terry Fontenot's mind. I think it's winning. And I think that's what fills the building. That's what gets it loud and gets it exciting. I mean, look, when this team, you know, when they went on the Super Bowl run, it was the Georgia Dome. It's a terrific sports city. It gets loud. It gets crazy. You've got passionate fans win or lose. But you're right, there's a lot going on, and I think anywhere save probably the cities you mentioned, Green Bay, Buffalo, Kansas City, anywhere when things are rough, you know, it's not going to be the same kind of engagement, not going to be the same kind of environment. So the step on the way back to that, I think, is winning. That said, this is a city that loves its stars, looking back to, you know, Deion Sanders, Michael Vick, and Julio, and Ronald Acuna, and Trey Young. And it goes on and on.
Pachulia.
Yeah, exactly. Right there with them. But yeah, this is a city that loves stars. And I think when you've driven around Atlanta, you see Grady Jarrett on billboards. I don't think it's going to be long before you see Bijan Robinson, up there as well. So this is, you know, it's a city that loves its stars, but I think ultimately it's building that consistently winning team that's going to lead to all the other stuff, you know, ticket sales, volume, everything else that they want to get. And it all comes back to, you know, getting the quarterback question right and a lot of other things, but that's the big one.
Dude, that's so true. I remember going down there a few times through that Super Bowl run when I was at Bleacher Report, and that city came alive. I mean, Jermaine Dupri, his song's playing everywhere again. Welcome to Atlanta. It can be a fun place to play football.
The sideline. It's a C&B scene. You see everybody there.
Oh yeah.
They get the, you know, they've had, you know, concerts during the game. They had a great tribute to the 50 years of hip hop this year, where they had a whole bunch of little mini concerts during the game. They do a great job. It's a real fun sports city. I'm not trying to Chamber of Commerce Atlanta here for you, but hey, bring the Dunn clan down. Fondy would be happy to see you. I can't believe he's kept it quiet this long. What a good boy. He just respects the podcast. But yeah, it's a franchise that has, and you know, also I think as much focus was given to Raheem Morris saying, I'm here because of the quarterback play. He went out of his way an awful lot, to credit Terry Fontenot and to credit Arthur Smith. Because he has also said, hey, I'm walking into a good situation. And I think you gotta, you know, tip your cap to Arthur Smith and Terry Fontenot and those folks, but also appreciate Raheem Morris saying, hey, this is a good situation. We need to go win now and give credit to the folks who I'm replacing for doing a lot of that work.
Totally. I mean, I think that's a good place to end it because I feel like this is a team in good hands. I really do, you know. Trying to speak to as many scouts and execs and coaches as you can around the league and get this panoramic view of how different teams are run. I think that Terry Fontenot's got his shit together. I think he's got a hell of a personnel staff. And something had to change, right? What's the definition of insanity, right? You go 7-10 3 years in a row. I think I wouldn't be surprised if Arthur Smith did good things in Pittsburgh as a coordinator, but sure. they need a new coach in Atlanta, and now they need a new quarterback. It would not surprise me one bit if the Atlanta Falcons are the team that makes a leap. Now, it's early. It's barely March, so let's see what they do at quarterback.
Yeah, we got 10 days till
the eye of the storm. Yes, that's right. 10 days.
Yeah, and you got – hey, and we didn't even really talk about him. You got a guy in Raheem Morris that – I mean, I don't know how many people you asked around the combine. I talked to a lot of, you know, the folks I see around the league. People love this dude. I mean, and it's easy to see why. Big smile on his face, endears himself to people. And a really interesting thing, and I'll leave you with this. I'm not trying to stretch it out, but one thing that Arthur Blank made a point on, Falcons owner, when talking about Raheem Morris, is they want to put a big emphasis on developing a staff. And you look at what Sean McVay did and what he came from, and Raheem Morris is a product of that. So Zach Robinson and a lot of other guys, is Arthur Blank said, look, you know, they made the run to the Super Bowl, and he felt like one of the biggest missteps was not having folks in place to step in for Kyle Shanahan. I mean, you look at the guys that were on that staff that left, you know, Matt LaFleur, Mike McDaniel, other folks like that. So that is, I thought it was revealing from the Falcons owner to say, this is something that we were real impressed with Raheem Morris in the interviews, was he came in not just with a plan for now, but for developing the staff so that when they go on a run and when their assistants get poached, they'll be ready to continue that. So I think that's one thing that that really stood out, it seems, to Arthur Blank and company, was not just the culture that Raheem Morris can build in the locker room, you know, in the city and the winning, it's they feel like he's the guy to build something sustainable. So I think that's an interesting thing as well. And being around the combine, just hearing people just like light up talking about him, telling stories about Raheem Morris was kind of cool. But you know what? They're going to play the games, and I think the win-loss record will be what folks in Atlanta focus on.
When you really think about it, In through that lens and in a million different ways, you understand why they hired Raheem Morris and not Bill Belichick, or why that would be. It sounds crazy, right? Bill Belichick, greatest coach of all time.
Yeah.
But where football is at in 2024 and where it's going, I think the Falcons made a difficult, correct decision here. That's if, you know, they turned Belichick down and it wasn't the other way around. Was, do you have any insight there?
No, I don't. I mean, they said the job, they've said on the record many times, job was not offered. So we'll take them at their word. I haven't heard anything otherwise from, you know, the Belichick world. I don't think he's going out of his way to do interviews. But yeah, I think this is a guy that they obviously, his acumen as a coach is, you know, will not be questioned by anybody, but I think they really value the team building, the culture building, the locker room building, the coach's office suite culture building. I don't know what that would be called. But I think that's what they see in Raheem Morris. And that, I think, is what appealed to them. And yeah, well, they'll get to put that theory to the test, and they'll have a big decision in front of them in, I don't know, 10 days or so, looking at the clock, if they're going to go the free agent route.
Justin Felder. Everyone, make sure you follow my good buddy here, at Justin_Fox5 on the X. Where else do you want to send folks, Justin?
Got the Instagram, got the Facebook. I'm trying to cut down on I try to get, you know, few posts, but make them quality on the social thinking. Media, just for a sanity break. Read books, read long form things like your fine website. And try to free my brain a little bit. I'll let you know if it ever works. I don't know how good a job I'm doing, but that's the goal.
That's the great snapback is here, Justin. We're all trying to take our brains back and say no to the algorithms and no to the corporations. And
one day,
it's a great message to send everybody out on. Thank you so much for hanging out and talking Atlanta Falcons with us. And it's great to see you again after I saw you last week.
I know. Tell the family. I say hi from our whole clan here. Fondy sends his love, and come on through Atlanta soon. And thank you for the fine work you do. Keep it up. It's a great part of the NFL media sphere. You know, I think you do great work, but it's worth saying again.
Hey, right back at you. It's awesome to see you've become such a major, major presence down there in Atlanta. Not surprised one bit. Again, Justin Felder, check his work out. The best there is in Atlanta. Thanks so much for hanging out.
Thanks, man.